B-Pod Studios.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Just a quick comment on Steph. You know, I released a statement on him, and, you know, absolutely, you know, appreciate and feel strongly about the player and the person. He's a great kid. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, as I said, we decided to part ways. Don't have any other comment on that right now. So that is what it is. We're really focused on Houston.
Yeah, I can't believe this one. And just going back to post-2019, outside of the obvious and the quarterback who he helped push out and he ends up going to Tampa Bay, I can't think of another asset management as poor as this one with how Bill Belichick handled Stephon Gilmore. Last year, Chris, it's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Last year, you know, halfway through it, when Bill is calling into SiriusXM radio and talking to his old pal Charlie Weiss and whining about the salary cap issues of the Patriots, you know, he's, for all intents and purposes, saying, like, this is a throwaway year. Well, if you knew that going into it, why didn't you move Stephon Gilmore prior to 2020? So that's where you have to take it back with Gilmore and say, like, you couldn't have screwed this up any worse. So then he plays 11 games, gets hurt, kind of hurts his trade value. But post-2019, when he's defensive player of the year, if you know this isn't going to work out, and you knew that 2020 was a reset year, why didn't you trade him then? So now you wait. And Gilmore, you know, essentially was having a hold in, and I don't blame him. It's reported that he's going to be cut, and you end up trading him for basically nothing. The Carolina Panthers, a sixth-round pick in 2023? It's the type of move, Chris, that makes this year worse, not better. I've been trying to wrap my head around it, but if nothing else, you know, the one takeaway that I have from it is you couldn't have screwed up this asset management any worse than this.
Yeah, I mean, it's not great, obviously, when you look at it. When you know, Bill's always the guy that says, I'd rather be a year early than a year late. And I think he's just way late on moving on. And I think what that shows you is that he thought there was a way to keep this guy on the team and that he knew, obviously, they're a better team with him. And it just reached sort of the point of no return. And that's one where Bill didn't read the tea leaves properly, because you certainly could have gotten more than a 2023 sixth-round pick for Gilmore if you'd moved him, not this past training camp, but the training camp before. And that obviously did not happen. So you're right, from an asset management standpoint. I mean, I think even if you had moved him during training camp, because if he goes to another team, I think he's not on PUP. He shows the other team that he's healthy. Now, are you going to get a second-round pick from him at that point? No, but could you get a four in the next draft? I think you might have been able to get that.
You got more for Sony Michel.
Yeah, I know. I heard people say that. I mean, that's wild when you really think about it. That's absolutely wild when you think about what's happened there. And this fits into, a larger mosaic of some questionable moves by Bill. And is he getting, for a team that's built on value, is he maximizing his assets? And I'll go all the way back to Jacoby Brissett, who's no great shakes, don't get me wrong, but he's a quarterback in the NFL that's capable of starting some games. And you traded him for Philip Dorsett, okay? Jimmy Garoppolo, we all know that. He could have gotten more for Jimmy than he got at the end of the day. There's just a pattern, I think, here of not necessarily maximizing these assets, whether it's because you're misreading the situation or you're being too stubborn or because you would rather steer this person either away from a particular team or to a particular team. And I just think he always says, I do what's in the best interest of the team. I think when you look at some of these moves, it's difficult to make the case that what happened here with Gilmore, or going back to what happened with Garoppolo and some of the other moves in between, that those are moves that were in the best interest of the team.
Do you feel like there's not enough checks and balances with that? Like, you know, look, he runs the football ops,
yeah.
But again, this is one that, just from a business standpoint, how is this good for the organization if this is all the return is?
It's good for the organization standpoint because they save the money. They're not paying Gilmore. I mean, I'm sure that's not lost on his bosses. That makes some sense. And to me, that's the only thing that makes sense from a timing standpoint, because the reality is you had two more weeks to figure this out because he was on PUP.
Right.
Now, Bill might have just looked at it and said, look, we need to cut bait. I don't want guys thinking Gilmore's coming back or riding to the rescue when he's not. It's very clear to me that we're not going to be able to reach an agreement. I think it was clear to all sides there. And so maybe that's why, in his mind, the timing made sense. The timing was now. But I do think there's obviously something to be said for the idea of moving on from him, not having to pay him his money. And that's real money. As Felger always says, you know, there's the cap and then there's real money. There's a real budget for the Patriots. So they spend real dollars, a lot of them. So you save some money there with a guy that, you know, basically I don't think ever planned to play for you again.
And in terms of, you know, the timing too, is some of this maybe, you know, because I think that, you know, Bill gave it away a little bit that he feels really confident in the secondary, the way that they're playing.
Yes,
and the way he was like, you know, talking up that Tampa offense, look at the job we did against them. Do you think that has to do with it? Like, you know, the secondary actually isn't an issue. He feels strong about guys like J.C. Jackson and the rest of those guys back there, and that's why he looked at Stephon Gilmore as expendable, and we don't need him going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a great point you raised, Jim. I think we can't overlook the timing of the who was the prior opponent. If they had gone out and got lit up by Tampa, then maybe he holds on to Stephon Gilmore a little longer to see, is there anything we can do here? But because they played so well, and it was Jonathan Jones and J.C. Jackson and Jalen Mills, maybe that did lead Bill to the point of like, look, this is going nowhere. We've been trying really for 2 years to try and come to some sort of agreement. We're not able to do it. Let's just cut bait. But again, a 2023 six for Gilmore, that's
nothing.
I mean, I'll be honest. I can't believe that there's not anything in there from a conditional standpoint that says, hey, Carolina, if you re-sign him, you know, we get a fourth round pick in, I don't know, 2023 or 2024. There's no other mechanism built into the deal that at least helps them be in a position to recoup like actual value for him. If it turns out he goes to Carolina is healthy, and he doesn't have to be the 2019 NFL Defensive Player of the Year, but if he's 75% of that, he's worth way more than a sixth round pick in 2023.
Your thoughts on the Stephon Gilmore move, if you want to join us, 617-779-0985. Scott, Rhode Island, with the Patriots thought on Steve Belichick. You're next here in Gaspar Murray. Hello.
Hello, how we doing?
Good, what's up?
Doing well. So this is not necessarily about the weird faces that Steve Belichick was making on the sideline. It was more just kind of made me think, is that very anti-Belichick to have your son on the coaching staff? And as a linebacker coach, I mean, this guy's coached some pretty good linebackers in the last 20 years. You couldn't find somebody else better for that role. And I think a lot of animosity started about 10 years ago. When did this guy start? About 10 years ago. So I don't know, I just feel like that is something that doesn't get enough coverage, is how is this nepotism of having his son on the coaching staff. And the Many Saints of New York, this absolutely horrible movie. You were spot on. That is probably the worst film in history, because the potential level for it to be so good, and it just failed in every... That was unbelievably bad. You have never been more spot on about anything ever. That was absolutely horrible.
Thanks,
but,
Scott.
I'll just hang up and listen to your call. Goodbye.
All right, appreciate it. Yeah, if you could drop him, B-Rub. This thing, of course, is all locked up, because why wouldn't it be? First on, he sounded surprised that he had Stephen Belichick on his coaching staff. I know. I mean, nepotism has run rampant with the Bill Belichick coaching staff for the better part of a decade, Chris. Like, no one should be surprised
at
that.
Yeah, I mean, so this is one for me that everything I've heard, it's not a great look. Okay, I'll say that. But everything I've heard from players and other people is that Steve Belichick is a good coach. And in a way, his curse, I guess it's his blessing and his curse, is having the Belichick name. No matter what he does, people are going to say, well, you only have the job because your dad's there, and it's nepotism, you know, and they're going to say that, even though he's a good coach, I think, on his own. So look, the blessing is he's probably getting some opportunities that maybe he wouldn't have gotten earlier in his career. The curse is he's capitalizing on those opportunities on his own talent, and no one's giving it to him because of his last name. If I had heard otherwise, that he wasn't a good coach, or that players didn't like him or believe in him, I would tell you. But everything I've heard, and I've asked these questions going back a couple of years, players like him. He's a good coach. He knows what he's doing. Let me put it like this. If I had to choose between Steve Belichick and Matt Patricia, I'm taking Steve Belichick every day, all day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if there's like nepotism here, and I know it's not technically nepotism because they're not related, but if there's anything that's like a bad Bill decision, like, you know, bringing in friends and family in a role he shouldn't be in, it's Matt Patricia, not Steve Belichick.
And then back to that Many Saints of Newark. If you didn't listen to last week's show, you know, check out the podcast, 98.5thesportshub.com or the app. But yeah, it's a terrible movie, and the caller has it right. It's one of the worst movies ever made. And boy, how they crowbar in certain things. Like, Like, oh, when young baby Christopher makes an appearance as a baby and whines whenever young Tony gets near him. And then the old lady sitting at the dinner table says, oh, babies know more than we realize. Because, see, Tony kills Christopher, and the baby knows the baby knows that 30 years down the road that Christopher is going to be killed by Uncle Tony. Ooh. Oh, what a piece of garbage.
Was the baby writing movie scripts at that point, too?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Oh, man. And what a horrible piece of crap that movie is. It just takes a dump all over one of the great television series of all time. The many saints of Newark. You see, babies know more than we realize. Ooh.
That's called foreshadowing, Jim.
Yeah. And see, the baby knows that also your future fiance is going to be killed by your uncle or his friend Silvio. Ah. Oh, God. All right.
Was
well,
Dr. Melfi in it? Was there like a young.
She might as well
was
be.
There was like a young Dr. Melfi, like, you know, I don't know, skipping rope or something outside of school that Tony walked by.
Yeah, I also liked how, you know, see, in The Sopranos, the series. Tony, Sil, like all the guys that, you know, they're all kind of around the same age. But now in The Many Saints of Newark, there's like a 10-year age difference all of a sudden.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's just.
Is Carmella in it?
For like a half second. Yeah, when they're trying to like get beers. You know, it's a like young teen Carmella. And of course, in case, you know, there was no subtlety there. You know, you see the blonde girl, you put two and two together. But of course, Tony has to lean out of the phone booth and say, hey, Carm. Do you have 25 cents to make the call or whatever he says? Hey, Carmella, you know, just right over the head.
Hey, future wife, yeah. Do you have 25
cents? Hey, my future wife, Carmella, do you have 25 cents so I can make a phone call?
Was there like a part of it where he passes something like in New Jersey? Like let's say hypothetically, they pass like the Meadowlands. He's like, Meadow. I really like that name.
Oh, <You know? laughs> you know.
I'm going to file that one away, you know?
Yeah, Tony having aspirations about playing football. And, of course, you know, young junior has to say at the table, he doesn't have the makings of a varsity athlete. You know, it was one of the great lines in the series, but we got to crowbar that in, too, for everyone to go, oh, he always knew. Oh, God.
Just, it sounds like just an entire movie of, like, callbacks and really poor fan service.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you have taste like I do, you spend the whole time just yelling F you to the television screen.
Or if you're me, you just swear out.
You're right. Yep. Yeah. Potty mouth Chris over there.
That's me.
We're continuing to take your calls on the Gilmore thing. The Patriots. You like their chances tomorrow with basically a sieve of an offensive line, even more of a sieve. It's been one anyway, but down 4 out of 5 starters. A little bit nervous against this game against Houston. Of course, the Red Sox big win last night, the comeback win over the Rays. All that on the table here on Gaspar Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Chris Gasper. Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
So how do we get to what went down on Wednesday? Well, earlier this week, what I've been told is that the Patriots did try to trade Stephon Gilmore. And there were a few barriers to a deal getting done prior to the deal that was done on Wednesday afternoon. Number one was the fact that he was a 31-year-old corner coming off of injury. He hadn't practiced. He hadn't played in a game. So for the Patriots to trade him to a team that had not been able to see how his rehab was going, that was a hindrance to the Patriots getting the compensation they were hoping for. So maybe you can package those two hurdles into one hurdle. Number one, some uncertainty in Gilmore's health from teams around the league. And number two, the asking price for the Patriots being a little bit too high for some teams.
NBC Sports Boston's Phil Perry, the Stephon Gilmore situation. Now he gone for a 6th-round draft pick in 2023, the Carolina Panthers. A team, by the way, that you have to go face, I think it's the first Sunday in November.
November the 7th.
And, yeah, I mean, Are you going to be shocked if Gilmore goes off in that game and picks Mac Jones off a couple of times? I wouldn't be. Like a revenge game for Stephon Gilmore?
It's funny because a lot of people thought that was going to be the Cam Newton game during
training camp,
and now it could be the Stephon Gilmore game. So either way, it should be an interesting game.
So part of this, Chris, too, and this also kind of pissed me off, is that you hear that Bill, this thing is floated out there earlier in the day in that, hey, we're going to cut him. So, hey, make your phone calls now if you want to try to trade for him because you have until 4 o'clock this afternoon before we release him. But that Bill was calling around to, like, his buddies around the league. So, again, these are the kind of things. Like, did there need to be more checks and balances in terms of, like, football ops and how, some of these roster decisions are made? Because Bill just wheeling and dealing with his buddies, like, how is that best for the organization, Like, that part's annoying.
I agree with you on that. And I don't know how that's best for the organization. I don't know why he sometimes narrows down the field. Maybe it's concern about information leaking, and he feels like if it leaks, that undercuts his leverage. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt there, that it's not just trying to do business with friends. It's that there's an actual strategic reason why he does it that way. But I don't know. I mean, I'd say it's not great. Like, the return on some of the recent assets has not been what you would expect. It just isn't. And one of the things I wonder, we can talk about the idea of a more collaborative approach when it comes to player personnel. But if you start to take some of that stuff away from Bill, how does he respond to that? It's sort of all wrapped up in one package. And you saw the way he had the team ready to go and the way they played against Tampa last week that, he's still at the top of his game as a coach, and you don't want to lose that. So I think it's a really tricky situation to navigate if you're the Crafts. I think you have every right to be upset about some of the player personnel stuff. And Robert Kraft has expressed that, I think, subtly, but also directly when he talked about the draft, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he talked about the draft, and he basically was saying we haven't drafted well recently. But I think they have to be careful how far they go in terms of words and actions, or you get to a point where Bill says, well, what are you saying? You're going to take this away? You're going to give Dave Ziegler final say, and I'm just Joe Blow coach? All right, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I wouldn't blame them, and I get that the Crafts are sensitive about that with how the Bill Parcells thing played out here, 20-some-odd years ago.
Yeah.
Or maybe it just speaks to this, Chris, to go back to the whole Sopranos angle. Like, it's Bill's like acting like he's a made guy. Like, a guy that knows he has long-term job security, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't have to deal with checks and balances, you can call your buddies and wheel and deal with them.
Yeah.
Or even if he did this with the blessing of ownership, it's almost the same thing. Like, why would Bob Kraft give Bill his blessing on this kind of move unless he thought Bill was here to stay? Like, that was kind of one of my takeaways from this week is, like, oh, Bill's here forever. Like, this is like such a bold move. And it's like, again, like, middle finger in the air. You don't like it, tough. I do it. Like, people want to say, like, oh, no, if they miss the playoffs, then Bill's on the hot seat. I don't know. You do a move like this, and some of these, some of the ways that he's handled this roster, and, again, going back a few years and trading Jimmy Garoppolo for just a second round pick. Like, these are the moves of a made guy, Calm. Like, he's here forever.
I think that we had this discussion a little bit yesterday. He's the face of the franchise. He's what they're selling.
Yeah.
Like, ultimately, what they're selling is hope and a reboot and the idea that, look, we're not going to be down for very long because we're the Patriots and we have this guy in Bill Belichick who knows how to put it all together. So, I still think Bill's a big draw for the fan base. I think Bill is still what lets you know that the Patriots are still the Patriots. So just from a business standpoint, I don't really think they can pull away from him. And maybe Bill knows that too. So, I don't know. I think it's really kind of fascinating when you look at it, but I don't think that they can disentangle themselves from Bill Belichick really easily, nor should they want to, because again, both from a football standpoint and a business standpoint, he's a big part of what they're selling in terms of hope in the future and all that stuff. Like, isn't a big part of, I know people are really high on Mac Jones, but don't you think a big part of being high on Mac Jones is basically saying, well, Bill picked him in the first round, and Bill's never picked a quarterback in the first round, so Bill must have seen something. And, Brady wouldn't be Brady if he hadn't been coached by Bill, which is something people are still clinging to here. So if you got rid of Bill, wouldn't that just change all that calculus? Wouldn't that change everything?
Yeah. And I think a lot of the things, the way that people feel about Mac Jones, I'm with you on this. It's the thirst for the, it's QB
it
thirst.
It is the QB thirst. The thirst is real.
And people know that, you know, without a quarterback and franchise quarterback in this league, you really have no chance. So people just want to be like, oh, please tell me this is the next guy. Please, please. Because without one, you got nothing. And through 4 weeks, he looks good. Good, not great. I'd like to
see. He's the best of the rookie quarterbacks. There's no question about that. But I just think people are putting him at a level he's not performing at. I mean, look, he certainly can execute the offense. There's no question about that. But can he elevate the offense?
Do you think he's the best of the bunch?
Right now, performance-wise?
Did you watch a Thursday night game with Jacksonville and Cincinnati a few weeks ago?
Oh, I think Trevor Lawrence has a higher ceiling. But I think overall performance consistency, Mac Jones is best of the bunch.
Yeah, I'll give him this. So the thing that really impressed me, Chris, is so you remember going back, and I was one of these people too, like, you can't play this kid in this game. They're going to get smoked. This is Brady's comeback, blah, blah, blah. He did not wilt in that moment. He didn't.
No, he didn't.
It was a good game for him. Again, I would have liked to see a few more shots into the end zone. That one that should have been picked off by Devin White, horrific throw across
that was
his body.
Terrible.
But he was good. He was good, and he didn't shy away in the spotlight in that moment. He had a good game. And of the quarterbacks that night, Jacoby Myers was the best. But
that's true.
Mac Jones had a very good game, and that was impressive. But just in terms of ceiling and talent, again, look at Trevor Lawrence and I know they're second year guys, but Burrow, Herbert, those guys, they pop immediately. They'll wow you. I have yet to be wowed by Mac Jones. While he's been impressive, and I think he's certainly shown toughness, resiliency, all those kind of things, intangibles like that, smarts, can read a defense, the wow factor isn't there with this kid yet.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with everything you said on that. I mean, I think he's very smart. He's accurate. He knows how to execute the defense. And when it looks good in terms of clean pocket, good reads. I think that he looks very good there. You know, my thing from the jump has been, is he the type of guy who's a difference maker, who's going to make impact plays, who's going to make the guys around him better? And it's four games in. I've said what my prediction is. I haven't seen anything that would move me off that prediction. You want to say it's too soon? That's fine. We can say it's too soon. But I haven't seen anything that would lead me to move off of my prediction at this point. And my projection for him, I mean, I have to be honest, just going back and forth with people on Twitter, it's interesting. People are sort of like, well, why would you give up on a rookie quarterback, for Deshaun Watson? And let's for a minute just take out the very serious allegations against Deshaun Watson. I fully acknowledge that they're serious allegations. And, you know, if they're true, then I hope he ends up, doing the time and getting the punishment that he deserves. But my sense is they'll be resolved somehow in a way that he'll be able to play. So let's put that to the side and just talk pure football. And let's also not be naive. The Patriots have had guys on their team before. I mean, they signed Michael Floyd, who stunk after he got I believe the technical term in Arizona is super extreme DUI.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So it's let's not reliability is every. I mean, the Patriots brought in Josh Gordon. So if you're worried about Deshaun Watson can't control himself and he might not be on the field, you brought in the most unreliable player literally in the history of the league in Josh Gordon. So let's not pretend they wouldn't bring somebody in from a talent standpoint. Just football for football. Some people are like, oh, why would you move on from a rookie quarterback for Deshaun Watson? Well, let me ask you this. Why would the Miami Dolphins be ready to move on from a guy who was a rookie last year who beat you? Now he's a second year guy, has played you twice and beat you twice. For Deshaun Watson.
Because
you know why?
Talent trumps trouble.
Talent trumps trouble, and Deshaun Watson is a bona fide franchise quarterback. Guaranteed, as they say. Tua Tagovailoa could become one. Mac Jones might be on the path to being one, but those are maybes and mites. This guy's the real deal and the sure thing. And if you look back at what Belichick has said about him, and if you look back at the way he's played against your team, then you know that. They could win a lot of football games with Deshaun Watson. They might win a lot of football games someday with Mac Jones. So that's where I'm kind of the QB thirst and the laundry logic. And this guy's just in our uniform. So we're going to have zero perspective on what he really is. That's where I get annoyed. If you're pretty much saying to me, you wouldn't trade Mac Jones for Deshaun Watson tomorrow, then you're a bobo.
Yeah. So I want to explore this further because I feel like you have some inside intel on Deshaun Watson. So we'll peel back the ass-grabbing onion that is Deshaun Watson, who you won't see tomorrow, what with his penchant for all that ass-grabbing on the massage table. But could he be here, and could there be real interest from Bill Belichick and the Patriots next season? We'll get to that, along with your phone calls, next on Gasper and Murray.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. All right, to you we go with your thoughts on the Patriots. We'll get back to the Red Sox, their big win, comeback win over the Rays, to even up the ALDS last night down at the Trop in Tampa. And B-Rob, behind the glass, you're going to have to run this thing because, of course, it is crap the bed once again, that our lovely phone screener and this horrific program that hopefully will go away once we move out of this building. But can we go to Mike in Duxbury on line two there, B-Rob? Hi, you're next here on Gasper and Murray, Mike.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Chris, yesterday you mentioned that it's dawned on the Patriots and Belichick and people in the building that maybe they need a great quarterback to run their offense and to enhance people around and make players better. Really? 20 years they had Brady and it just dawned on them that maybe they need a great quarterback? What happened to the narrative they could win with any top 15 guy? Is that gone now?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's gone, and it's not just the offense; it's the overall sort of system and the overall operation. You can save some money offensively on your weapons and overall on your salary cap if you have a quarterback that can make do with lesser talent. Obviously, that's not sort of what the plan was going into this year with all the money they spent, but I do think there is sort of a realization or recognition that it runs it. It's not that it's not doable the way they're trying to do it. It's that it runs smoother and is easier with a quarterback that enhances the talent around him,
Steve,
if that makes sense.
Steve in Fall River, you're next here on Gasper Murray on the Patriots. Go ahead, Steve.
Chris, you said something else, and I'm not trying to put you on trial. I just want to clarify. You said Bill says he likes to get rid of people a year early. I've heard the media say he does get it, and it's legend that he gets rid of people a year early. Do you think he gets rid of people a year early and has a good track record of it, or are you just saying he believes that? And then I'd like to comment once I hear your answer.
I'm saying that he believes that he believes it's better to get rid of a guy a year early than a year late. So let's say you get rid of a guy a year early and he's still productive. You're better off with him having one more year of productivity.
But you don't believe he's foolproof at that, do you?
No, I don't believe he's
foolproof. Okay, but you realize people believe he's foolproof at that. He's not legendary at that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I do.
Which is totally bunk. That's one lie built on a lot of other lies. You also said the Crafts can't detangle from him. I was there when there was no hope in 91, yeah, and they brought in Bill Parcells, 6,700 season ticket accounts in 3 days. That was hope. That was bona fide hope. Mm. I don't see that same thing with the marketing of Belichick. As a matter of fact, once you keep watching this and you tangle out the who was more important, Brady versus Belichick, you're realizing that Bill Belichick's in his ninth season without Tom Brady, which is three average coaching careers, and he's had two winning seasons and he's 1-1 in the playoffs. There's another narrative that's going to continue to get whittled at. And then when you go on to this idiotic asset management, you forget Matt Castle, who went 11-5, and he got a second round pick from one team and threw in Mike Vrabel.
Oh, I don't forget. It's a good point. I haven't mentioned it, but
I hear nobody mentioning it. Hello?
No, you're right. It's a good
point.
The
guy went to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I covered that.
He went to the Pro Bowl with Kansas City.
I covered
that. Was a secretive one, wasn't it?
It was. And you know what's funny is he could have gotten, I know for a fact he could have gotten more from other teams because I was on the beat at that time.
Really?
I heard from people in Castle's camp that, and the current offensive coordinator said at the owners' meetings that year that he was, so I know for a fact that Josh tried to trade for Castle. That's what started the whole deal with Jay Cutler, is Cutler's people found out, you know, somehow that there was an issue there and that they had tried to trade for Castle, and that sent Cutler off the deep end. That was McJaygate in Denver. And McDaniels was willing to give up more than what they gave up for what Kansas City gave up for Castle. And McDaniels said this, you know, publicly at the owners' meetings that year. We asked him about it. Why do you think Bill didn't want to trade you Matt Castle? And he said, I don't know. So, yeah, Bill absolutely could have gotten more for Matt Castle than he got. I mean, we're going way back. Like, how many Super Bowls have they won since then? So it's nitpicking a little. But, yes, he could have gotten – he steered him to Kansas City to help Scott Pioli.
So what are you hearing on Deshaun Watson?
On Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not hearing anything specific to Deshaun Watson. I mean, I know the Patriots have always really liked him. There was stuff in the offseason, people talking about the Patriots maybe sniffing around Deshaun Watson. All I'm doing is putting like two and two together in terms of, or maybe three and three. The Patriots, Belichick has always liked Deshaun Watson. The Patriots have always liked a distressed asset. There's also the connection there with Nick Caserio. You have a quarterback in Mac Jones who is has shown to be capable. So if you were to make that deal, it's not like Caserio is in a position where he's not getting anything back. He's getting a quarterback that could be his long-term quarterback. And I think, again, just sort of the idea there in the building of it's not that they don't feel they can't do it the way that they're doing it. And look, Josh McDaniels is the biggest Mac Jones fan going. So I understand it's going to be like, oh, you know, they still like Mac. Of course they still like Mac Jones. They love Mac Jones. And you know, Josh thinks he can turn Mac Jones into Tom Brady. That's fine. But it's sort of like an understanding of this whole thing runs smoother with a out-of-the-box franchise quarterback.
So, if given the opportunity that Deshaun Watson's on the table, this thing is cleared up next year, do you think it's a realistic situation that they would maybe try to be in on him and Mac Jones would be part of that deal and sending him to the Houston Texans?
I do. Now, there's some salary cap gymnastics you'd have to do, but again, we're talking about the guy who said, we all know cap space can be maneuvered in a variety of ways. I mean, $35 million base salary next year for Deshaun Watson, that's a lot of money, and it's all guaranteed. So you'd have to figure it out. Like, how are you going to adjust that? Would he take less? Can you obviously could turn a portion of it into a signing bonus and prorate it. That would help. But his base salaries are guaranteed the next 2 years, $35 million and $20 million. You know, $20 million in 2023, though. I mean, you tell me what you think. I don't think that's not that bad. Although I'm just looking at his contract now. It looks like he has a $17 million roster bonus, which is not great. So you'd have to figure out the salary cap stuff. But I think if his situation clears up and they figure out the salary cap stuff and he's still dangling out there and Caserio, you know, Caserio's not going to get three first round picks for this guy. He knows that. And Mac Jones continues to play the way he's playing and he has a pretty strong season and looks like a bona fide NFL starter somewhere on the Andy Dalton to Kirk Cousins scale. I could see it.
Oh, I would do that.
I would do it.
As long as everything's, you know, cleared up and or, you know, however they can figure that thing out. Deshaun Watson, who just turned 26 years old, I think is one of the top five, at the very least, quarterbacks in the league. Yeah, you do that. Like, and Bill, who is chasing the, you know, the wins record, obviously, yeah. You know, like, what gives you a better chance to win? A quarterback on the scale of Deshaun Watson, or you wait around and you're hoping Mac Jones, you know, becomes something more than an Andy Dalton or a Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
You make that move.
I mean, I would make that move. Look, there still is some fascination, and I think Bedard's spoken to this, and other people have too. They were fascinated with the idea of being able to do what teams like the Rams have done and maybe what Arizona is doing now with Kyler Murray or the Kansas City did with Mahomes too. Like, you have that quarterback and he's a great quarterback, but you have him on his rookie deal. It is the biggest advantage in professional football. And if you can get it, it's great. Now, Goff obviously wasn't that good, but he got coached up by McVay and they went to a Super Bowl and they were able to do what they did in part because he was on that rookie deal. They give him the new deal. It's a completely different situation. They had to back away from him, right? But if you can get Mac Jones to play at, let's say, Matt Ryan's level on a rookie deal, that gives you a ton of flexibility from a team-building standpoint. I think they're still fascinated with that. But then you're also getting smacked in the face with the reality of 7-9, 1-3, you know, how much longer do we want to, like, do that? Like, is it really worth it to – we can do it this way, we think, but it's a much harder – much longer road.
We'll continue to go through some of your Patriots calls before we reset and talk about the Red Sox and their big comeback win over the Rays at the top of the hour. But a couple open lines you want to join us. Talk Pat, 617-779-0985. It's Gasper and Murray back after this.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Jacoby in New Hampshire, next up here on Gasper Murray's. We're talking Patriots, a big game against Houston tomorrow, or it's bigger than it should be, but go ahead, Jacoby.
How's it going? I think hopefully the Pats have a great game tomorrow, but I was wondering what you guys think the season record will be, looking at, like, we got some tough games ahead in the schedule, so I was wondering what you guys think, like, the season record will be looking like. Do you think we could, like, clinch a wild card spot maybe? And, yeah.
Well, I still think that I said 10-7 at the beginning of the season. So far, you know, of the many things I'll admit I was wrong on, it doesn't look like the Buffalo Bills are taking the step back that I thought that they would have. You know, that said, Josh Allen is not what he was last year. But either way, I think that they can maybe get that seventh spot, Chris, like as a wild card. I think, you know, they have to start tomorrow. Like, you can win this game tomorrow, feel a little bit better about yourself. I know the Cowboys and Dak Prescott looks like a legitimate, you know, top five MVP candidate. But
I think that's the swing game, Jim.
Yeah, that game is here. I think their coach is a moron. If you can somehow, you know, slow that game down like you did against Tampa, and that's a high-powered offense, you know, hold them to only 19 points. You have a kind of a game plan like that and confuse Prescott and have him throw you a couple. You win that game, then, yeah, I mean, you can still – I think the playoffs could still be in play for you.
I could see them ripping off a three-game winning streak here.
Right, because then it's the Houston, Jets after
yeah,
that.
It's the Jets after that. And then I think that, to me, the two swing games here are Dallas and the Chargers. Can you beat Dallas at home as well as they're playing with an elite quarterback in Dak Prescott?
And then in L.A. on Halloween.
And then
Halloween.
With Herbert. Can you do to Herbert what you did last year? I mean, that's probably the worst game of Herbert's career. Bill really spun the dial on him, and he got him, and, you know, he looked terrible, and they really took advantage of that offensive line. Can you do that again, or does Herbert play against you like he plays against everyone else? Because then you're going to lose.
Chris in Cambridge, next here on Gasper Murray. Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. I have a quick analogy and a corollary. When I dialed in, Jim, you were talking about the idea of Bill as a made man. I work at a university, so the metaphor that I think with is a tenured faculty member. And, you know, when you have – the way that you get tenure at an elite university is you're at the top of your field for 7 to 14 years, and all of your peers basically look at your body of work and they say, we can't evaluate you anymore, so we're going to give you complete freedom and security. And the benefit of tenure really is that it does allow people to take risks that everybody else thinks is insane and sometimes pay off, but also sometimes you're just taking insane risks and there's nobody around to rein you in. And I think that's what – The behavior of Bill corresponds to that. And it's also true that if you look at a lot of tenured faculty members, there's a lot of nepotism in terms of, you know, maybe your kid runs a research lab and you could make more money working in biotech, but you're really comfortable in the university environment. You've got a lot of power. Everybody looks up to you, you know, and you see people who are comfortable and they never retire. They're in these roles until they're in their 80s. And those are the tendencies and the dynamics that I see around Bill and the Patriots more than some of these other kind of hot seat, you know, fears that I think about, even knowing how competitive people are. And my corollary to this is I actually think that there's a lot more the status quo that we see now. I see playing out indefinitely because I think Bill is too comfortable to leave. even with some restructuring around him or some increased collaboration around him, I think Robert is probably too scared slash comfortable with the setup, and Jonathan doesn't seem to be in total control yet. And I think, as Chris said earlier, Mac Jones is, whatever his shortcomings, he's still an important figure for the business of the franchise. And so I don't think we're going to see, no matter what the outcome is this year, Bill booted or reduced power in a way that is publicly visible. I think he's going to stick around as people pick up more auxiliary duties and become his lab techs. And we're just going to see this until he either kicks the bucket or can't make it into the office every day. And we're not going – that's the tenured faculty members who stick around until they're a million years old are the psychodynamics at play here.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, thank you. Wow, that was an
interesting corollary.
Intricate analogy that I think is apt in a lot of ways.
Let's go to Rocco in East Somerville on the Belichick-Brady dynamic. You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Rocco.
Hey, guys.
Rocco.
So, what's up, bro? So, listen, so all week I've been hearing about the meeting that happened after the game when Belichick went into Brady's locker room and saying, oh, that was the first time they saw each other after like a year and a half, whatever, you know, since, you know, Brady left the Patriots. And I'm scratching my head because that's not true. They met in the Hall of Fame ceremony in the summertime. Brady was there for Manning, Jimmy, and Belichick was there for Jimmy Johnson. And it was reported, I think Skip and Shannon were talking about it, that Brady and Belichick in the back were talking. And then Belichick was congratulating on Manning and Adrian James and Marvin Harrison, saying, oh, I'm glad I don't have to face you guys anymore. So that meeting wasn't like the first time. And that meeting, Michael Fugger was right. That meeting was to clear up something, you know. And Bert Breer said that it was clocked in 24 minutes. So my history and my experience, when you want to have a clear up meeting, that usually takes the 20 to 40 minutes. It gives two parties at both times to say what they want. You know, to congratulate someone, usually that takes only like 5 or 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah. No, it was more than congratulations.
It was clearing up something. It was saying, listen, what's up with this? I thought we were good in the summertime. You know, I'm hearing stuff from your dad. I'm hearing stuff from your trainer. You know, Linda has to, you know, make her account private. You know what I mean? Yeah. All the backlash that she's hearing. So what's up? Like, what do you have to tell me? That's why I think it was a clearing up meeting. All right, guys, have a wonderful
day. No, I think that's a good point, Rocco. And honestly, I had forgotten about the Hall of Fame thing. I think that's right. A great point. I don't think it's quite the way Rocco, and I don't know any details of the meeting. I just don't think it was quite the way he characterized it in terms of Bill coming in there and being like, hey, what's up with this? I think it was more him probably saying to him some stuff that maybe, because even at that Hall of Fame thing, I know he's saying they spoke. I have a hard time. My guess of the Hall of Fame thing was cordial, and it was almost sort of like when Belichick and Brady sat together for the NFL 100, right?
Yeah.
Where you're there and you're like waiting for him to just sort of like.
She's very businesslike.
Very businesslike, but you're sort of waiting the whole time for him to just throw these bouquets at Tom's feet, and he never really does it. So that's my guess of the Hall of Fame. I think this was more him throwing the bouquets at his feet and them sort of clearing it up and saying, like, look, I really appreciate you and you really appreciate me. And I'm just judging that based on what the tone has been from Tom afterwards. You know,
I
think Tom got some closure there. You know, not just Bill. I think Tom got some closure there, and that's what it sounded like.
How much of it do you think maybe had to do with they're trying to, you know, squash collectively now, they're trying to squash what make the Wickersham book, which is now going to be, you know, there's some excerpts that come out. You and I have had it.
I've gone
through a whole bunch of it.
It's good.
It is good. It's very interesting. You know, these guys don't, you know, both Belichick and Brady certainly don't come off as squeaky clean as the images they try to portray. How much of it do you think is maybe had to do with that? Like, you know, you had Bill come out this week and say, like, I've never spoke to Seth Wickersham, which is as Trumpian as it gets. Like, it's a crock and, you know, people eat it up because they want to believe what they want to believe. But it's some of that, because it does feel like, Chris, that with that book, the buzz has kind of died down.
A little bit, yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So I wonder if some of that conversation was, look, like,
maybe.
Let's just, you know, let's save face here. Let's do this. It's like get together for the kids type thing. You know what I mean?
Well, it's sort of like the old Cold War doctrine, right? You know, mutually assured destruction.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to prevent you from launching your missile. So maybe it's Bill saying, like, look, you destroying my legacy and me destroying yours doesn't do us any good. Not in those words exactly, but I really think it was a make good. This is just me, that it was like a make good meeting sort of by Bill to maybe really tell him, like, look, I appreciate everything you did here. I'm sorry we couldn't have the face to face before. It seems like that was important to you. You know, I think Bill probably did the whole "there's no quarterback I'd rather, you know, have" thing, sure, and all that. Because just the way Tom, and also, you know, you know how I feel about this. Just the way Jim Gray even like sort of phrased it. You know how I feel. Jim Gray, the media maitre d', like, let me show you to your answer, Mr. Brady. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just the whole way it was framed up and phrased, I think, tells you a little bit about what came out. At least how Tom felt coming out of that meeting, which was really good. That it was like a bury the hatchet, like, I appreciate you closure, kind of like a breakup closure meeting.
Yeah, which a lot of people don't get. And people always want that closure. I need the closure.
Yeah, you seem like more of a ghost guy.
Yeah.
You're not denying it. Yeah.
Neither confirm nor deny. All right. Well, with that, we'll continue to take your Patriots calls, thoughts on the Stephon Gilmore move, the game tomorrow, and its importance. Again, it's the lowly Houston Texans, but must win gets thrown around, but that's a must win.
It's a must win.
If they lose that, oh boy, it's rock bottom, and look out.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.